Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul MacDonald alongside Brian Davis, Gary Rutledge, and guest co-host first timer Mark Lyon. Hello, gents.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Good evening.
How are we all doing?
Better than it was last night.
Better than I was this morning when I watched the game.
And Brian's just non-committal at all. Well, as the festive season progressed, the San Francisco 49ers decided to put on their own performance of the Wizard of Oz. Trent Baalke clicked his heels together and said, "There's no place like home." Turns out most stadiums around the NFL are like home, as the 49ers can't seem to find a way to win in any of them. The offense played without heart and took on the role of the Tin Man. The coaching staff, without a football brain between them, played scarecrow. And Jed York, the Cowardly Lion, still can't find the courage to be accountable, despite another fan banner being flown over Levi Stadium before the game. The visiting Cincinnati Bengals took on the role of the Wicked Witch from the East, but this story didn't have a fairy tale ending, with the 49ers being handed their 10th loss of the season in a 24-14 loss that didn't even look interesting enough to warrant the garbage time touchdowns. Brian, this game was simply painful, but is it as low as we can go?
Oh, dear. I'm not really sure what to say that I haven't really said in the last few shows, to be perfectly honest. The first quarter offense was crap. The first half offense was crap. The defense were good this week, which was their token kind of 2 to 3 week outing. We punted too much. We coached soft. We played soft. We didn't execute, which seems to be the new buzz phrase going around the 49ers press conferences these days, doesn't it? We didn't execute. Well, it's all very well telling us that we didn't execute. That was pretty bloody obvious from watching the game that we didn't execute pretty much anything on Sunday night and for the majority of the season. Tell us how you didn't execute and why aren't you executing and how are you going to execute in the future? That's really what we want to hear. Not just tell us the obvious that you're not executing, because we can clearly see that.
Do you think, Gary, that as the game progressed, the defense slowed down, almost sort of gave up on the game?
No, not at all. I think our defense had a really good game. I think, you know, as Brian said, we see it every 2 to 3 weeks. But I think, you know, Bowman in particular stood out, and he was certainly trying to G on. I know he had a go at Lemonnier, didn't he, after another holding call? And he was sort of boosting him all the way through. And I think the defense were put in a horrible position by, you know, what we did in terms of the interceptions and bad punting. So I'm really not going to blame the defense this week at all. I think it was a lack of offense and 4.5 minutes of madness just before half time.
Looking at some of the stats, the astronomical, to be honest, Gabbert completed 30 of 50 attempts, 50 attempts in one game. And he had 29 attempts in the fourth quarter. That's just absolutely ridiculous. Now, Mark Lyon, you are our stat compiler normally for the show. So you compiled all these for us. What jumped out at you from the stats as you were compiling them this week?
Well, I think you've just kind of hit on one of them, Paul, that 29 fourth quarter passing attempts is really just the story of the game. And for me, we started off well too slow. Usual kind of three and out, regular punting, and then when you're playing from behind, your passing attempts are going to go higher than everything else.
Elsewhere, on third down completions, 2 of 14, yet again pitiful performance on third downs. Total first downs, 17 in total for the game. Lots of penalties, as you said. There was the penalty on Lemonnier. I don't think it was pass interference, was it? I think it was unsportsmanlike conduct for pushing somebody out of bounds. Frustration, do you think?
I just think a lack of discipline, I think. You know, I think Pears had 3 holding penalties against him. And, you know, I know he's new to the team, but, you know, say we did really get struggle. And I think we said at the start of the season that Kev brought up the fact that our penalties were killing us. And it was nearly 100 yards lost yesterday in penalties.
We seem to do that game in, game out. We do lose a hell of a lot of yardage in penalties, sometimes a hell of a lot more than 100 yards. Is this down to coaching, or, you know, does the coaching not instill the discipline that we need, or is it something else, Gary?
I think it's probably a lack of consistency in the players playing together. We've had so many changes, obviously starting from the start of the season, and, you know, with the injuries we keep picking up, I think players just aren't used to, you know, working with their colleagues, and it's just not having a settled team. And there is a bit of frustration in there with, obviously, you know, how the results have been going. So I think it's a bit of both, and, you know, but I think certainly not having a settled team is the key thing here.
Speaking of Eric Pierce, as we were again, Mark, thanks for this. Eric Pierce has the 8th highest cap number on the team as it stands right now. Eric Pierce needs to go.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. And the fact that Jordan Devey was inactive for the first game this season really was one of the positives that that I brought from that. I think when we go to Detroit next week, we should tell Eric Pierce the wrong flight time and try and get him left somewhere else that's not in California.
We've essentially got no O-line at the minute, have we? Which means pretty much we've got no offense. and that's pretty much where we are at the season right now. And on top of that, it's vanilla coaching. It's run. Oh, we're in third and long. Well, let's throw a pass short of the line of scrimmage. And we're punting again. And again, the punter, he's good one week. He's absolutely abysmal the following week. He's nowhere good enough to be a fifth round draft pick. And I'm still at this moment in time thinking that pretty much every offensive coach other than probably Tom Rathman should be fired. That poor offensive line led to poor quarterback play again. I don't think it would have mattered whether it was Kaepernick, Gabbert, or Michael Vick in his prime, or Joe Montana, or John Elway, whoever. It doesn't matter who's back there at the minute, because that O-line can't protect anything. You know, Gabbert looked good for 2 weeks, and he's regressing over the last fortnight, and that's mainly down to the O-line and the play calling again. From what I've been hearing on the radio, you know, he's still much more of a light character than Kaepernick. So maybe if they can address these O-line problems in free agency in the draft, we could be in a bit of a better set position for next season. But right now, it's just trying to keep Gabbert alive for next season right now.
Phil Dawson had a very, very rare mistake himself, didn't he, with a block. Was it a blocked field goal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was blocked, yeah.
Yeah, not something that he normally has trouble with. And you couldn't put it down to a bad snap. You couldn't put it down to a bad hold. He just didn't get any elevation under that ball.
No, and I think it'd be hard, you know, unfair for us to give him a hard time. He's, you know, he had one block the first game of the season, but then was it 17 or 19 in a row? So to, you know, blame Dawson for any of our woes is, you know, completely wrong. He's been the steady Eddie for the last two, three seasons we've had him. And, you know, dug us out of a hole many a time. So I think we can let him slide in this time.
Yeah, he's this decade's Nedney. But again, that was an incredible play from the from their defensive back to make the block. And again, it's down to poor blocking on behalf of the that line again, really.
We need to find another name for them, don't we? Not call them the offensive line anymore, because they aren't in any way offensive.
They're offensive in the wrong way, I think.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could block anyone on Twitter.
That's the line of the decade, that one. We have had lots of messages, lots of questions and comments in from the listeners to the show. We're going to get to some of them now. Neil Jepson, absolutely shocking. Maybe they should play like it's garbage time from the start. Has Gabbert reached his ceiling as a 49er? A couple of half-decent performances have been followed by some pretty ugly ones. Are we seeing the real Blaine Gabbert now?
I think it's a little bit harsh. You know, we said he did complete 30 or 50 yesterday. If you look at his stats, they look awful, 3 interceptions. But we know for a fact that 2 of those, Gabbert wasn't to blame. He was overthrowing and throwing short on some of the plays. But I think that was just because he's got no protection around him. So I don't think he's, you know, yes, he might have reached his ceiling, but I don't think he's an awful quarterback. You know, I would like to see us bring somebody in the draft, maybe a Goff or somebody who can compete with him and, you know, just bring both of them to a higher level. I don't think we're going to be seeing Cap again next season. So, you know, we're going to have to make do with, I say, either a new draftee coming through or Gabbert for another season.
Yeah, it goes back to what I just said there. You know, we need to obviously look at this problem with the O-line in free agency and in the draft. We've got a massive cap number next year to play with. We'd be absolutely foolish if we didn't, you know, look at maybe getting at least 3, maybe 4 new names in on that O-line for next season. Because right now, the thing we're seeing from Gabbert, which is making him look bad, again, is coming down to the coaching. He's throwing it short of the sticks. The deep defensive backs seem to know what routes our receivers are running, and it's all too basic and predictable. And another word that we maybe haven't used this season that maybe is starting to be banded around a lot. No, it's really boring to watch the 49ers this year. It's a boring team that doesn't win. They don't do anything remotely interesting or exciting. You know, not going for the 2-point conversions on the touchdown on Sunday was just boring and safe. You know, punting on three scores, you know, when we're three scores down at the start of the fourth quarter, it's boring. You know, running on first down, it's boring and safe. We're throwing short of the chains on third down, it's boring. And we're only scoring when the game is already done. It's boring. There's nothing. There's no incentive to watch the 49ers whatsoever right now.
Do you guys think that that's related to the fact that we've got a defensive-minded coach? Is that his natural kind of natural state of play, if you like, to kind of go for the defensive option first?
I think he likes to just play it safe. Like Brian said, you know, we're not going for 2 points. And I think Tom Sula tried to come out and sort of say he expected us to get three touchdowns. And if we missed the extra point, or sorry, missed the 2 point conversion, you know, would have been another touchdown behind. But that just seems, you know, wrong. It's, you know, I can't even think when the last time we went for 2 points was. So it is just sometimes, you know, we're not going for it on fourth down as much as we should be. We're always seeming to go for the punt. It's just our season unravelling, really, I think.
Stuart Whittaker wanted to touch on the coaching, as many others have. Hi, Stuart. Poor coaching highlighted the game, namely the challenge by Tom Sula. That was a bad call, wasn't it?
Again, this isn't a new problem, is it, that we're facing here? The challenges have been pretty poor. That was probably the one bad thing that we can look back on the Jim Harbaugh era and say that those challenges over that period were really bad, and that Tom Sula, he actually won one at the end of the game there for challenging the onside kick, but yeah, it was just a waste. It was a kind of an act of desperation again, I think, really.
Stuart goes on to say, bigger issue for me, though, was how the receivers could be offside multiple times. Again, is this a result of poor coaching, or is it a lack of focus? And if it's a lack of focus, where is their focus?
It's a strange one, because it's something that is kind of happening throughout the team. I think it's quite easy to highlight it when it's a wide receiver that, you know, take Patton as the example, not getting set. It strikes me as being the kind of mental error, and whether that's to do with preparation, whether it comes back to execution, or whether it just comes back to the coaches not being able to get the players in the right frame of mind for a game, something's not happening in terms of our preparation for games.
I think Gary touched on it earlier with the kind of the ill-disciplined comments, really. That filters down from the top. You know, we've got an ill-disciplined owner, GM in hiding, coaches who couldn't coach their way out of a wet paper bag. And, you know, that's trickling down to the players on the field. You know, when you start seeing false starts from wide receivers, you know, that's almost about as bad as it can get, and as low as we can get, surely.
Andrew Mitchell, are we in danger of becoming the Cleveland Browns in terms of constant staff changes, no franchise quarterback, bad draft choices? Could we have a decade of mediocrity ahead of us? And how do we possibly avoid it?
Well, firstly, I don't think we're going to have numerous staff changes. I think the coverage said yesterday they'd spoken to the incoming new president, Al Guido, is it? And, you know, he seemed to be indicating that Tom Sula's going to be there next season. And I imagine, you know, the only possible change might be an offensive coordinator. But I think Mangini will still be around. And certainly the way the defence are playing, you know, on odd weeks, I don't think they'll be in a rush to get rid of him. So I think we'll have some consistency there, which actually I think isn't a bad thing. I think getting rid of Tom Sula at the end of the season would be a bad thing, unless, you know, and we've touched on this before, we had a Sean Payton or a John Gruden who was going to come in, but we know that's not going to happen. How we stop the rot is by drafting well. And as we touched on before, with Balke at the helm, I'm not sure that's going to be a thing that we can do. So hopefully we make a change at that level and can draft well and keep some consistency.
Yeah, see, the problem there is if we do make a change at the GM level, effectively that GM is probably going to want to make his own coaching staff and making his own appointments, by which point that means wholesale coaching changes. And if they get a GM in who they tell him, well, Jim Tom Sula is going to be your head coach for the first season, effectively that's just another yes man behind the scenes, and that's exactly what we don't want. And I think the game on Sunday night, the score made the game look much, much closer than it actually was. And this worries me in some ways, because it will probably equate to Jed or Trent saying something along the lines of, well, we kept it close for a lot of the games. But the reality of that game was the Bengals stopped playing in the second half and had that game pretty much wrapped up essentially by the half. You know, they were pretty much just playing that second half out, not to attain any injuries, to their starters so that they would go into the postseason as healthy as possible. And this game probably should have been more like the scores that we saw earlier in the season against Arizona and Pittsburgh. And for all the calls of sort of fire Tom Sula and things like that, the more beat writers that I've had the time to listen to over the last couple of weeks and the more sort of articles I've had the time to read, it really does sound that he's going to be back next year unless the team completely give up on him in this final stretch. I mean, even Dennis Erickson got a second season. You know, Mike Nolan went into his, what was it, four seasons he had. And even, you know, Singletary had two. You know, the problem, again, is going to be who can they actually attract to work for Tom Sula? Or maybe not even for Tom Sula, but for York or Bauke. You know, the staff we've got now is made up of guys that nobody wanted to take with them last season in terms of, you know, Fangio and that. Failed head coaches at really bad teams who thought, we thought that they would be good guys for Tom Sula to fall back on. And a guy who was a bloody radio presenter last season and guys who've coached in Europe. That shows on the field to me now, especially on offence, you know, that there's not one good coach amongst them.
Not forgetting that Jim Tom Sula was a NFL Europe coach himself as well. The coaching merry-go-round has kind of started, or the talk has started, coaches leaving different teams. Chuck Pagano's name has popped up as well now as possibly being done in Indianapolis. Could he be a fit for the 49ers if they did decide to terminate Jim Tom Sula's contract?
I'm not sure about that. I think Pagano's a very similar character to Tom Sula. He's very good with the players. He's very much a, you know, a man's man, and you know, will get on well with the players. But whether he's got that steel and the coaching knowledge to guide the 49ers forward, I don't think we're gonna gain too much from putting him in over Tom Sula.
He had a decent amount of success in Indianapolis, didn't he? Okay, he never got as far as the Super Bowl, but you know, He's had better seasons than the 4-12 that we're currently looking at, Mark.
He has, and I suppose that it depends what we want. Is he better than Tom Sula? His record probably suggests that he is, but as I understand it, he's had a few run-ins with the GM, and that to me would just seem to be the kind of automatic red flag that would make Bulky and Jed say, thanks but no thanks, you're not the kind of person we're looking for.
And he's also had Andrew Luck with him while he's been there. So that's obviously contributed towards his success.
You could always go on a buy one, get one free. What do you think? Bring in Chuck Pagano and you get Andrew Luck free.
We'll be happy to do that with New Orleans and bring in Breeze and Peyton. But I can't see that happening either, unfortunately.
No. It is kind of looking more and more likely now that Jim Tom Sula is going to be the head coach next season. We've got to sort of wait that one out. And see what happens. Nathaniel James wanted us to try and pick apart the coaching staff. We have already kind of done that. One thing I wanted to get off my chest, I had a conversation through today with some guys. I think it was on the 49ers Empire group. And somebody put on the stats comparing Kaepernick and comparing Gabbert. And it was the amount of TDs they've thrown and the amount of interceptions that they've thrown this season. And they were very, very similar. For me, it's all about the O-line. Because they were saying, you know, get rid of Gabbert, bring in another QB. Bringing in another QB is not going to do a thing. Because for me, the problem is the O-line. Eric Pierce is not a decent lineman. He should not be on the field. Can anybody say that the entire O-line has performed this season at all? This, from snap to sack yesterday was 1.5 seconds. 1.5 seconds, that's not acceptable in the NFL. There isn't a QB in the league, I think, that could perform behind that line. Joe Montana would have been obliterated behind that line. Would other QBs scramble? Maybe. But Gabbert is scrambling. Kaepernick scrambled. The trouble is, they were having to scramble on such a high percentage of plays that it becomes the go-to play, and it's completely unrealistic to expect a QB to scramble on that many plays. The quarterback, whether it's Gabbert, whether it's Kaepernick, they can't rely on the line. They're setting up, and they're planning the exit route to avoid annihilation straight away. They can't trust the players who are entrusted to protect them. So, for me, it's sort the line out and the QB will progress. Change the QB, leave the line in place, and the 49ers will simply be known as a quarterback graveyard. Do you agree, Mark?
Yeah, I think for me, the everything starts with the O-line. It's really interesting because for me, it wouldn't just be the QB that improves by default as a result of an improved O-line. I think the running game would improve as well. There's a really good stat out there that Carlos Hyde is in the top three or four running backs for yards after contact. But he's one of the, depending on which way you look at it, but one of the leading running backs in the league that gets, in terms of how quickly he gets that contact. So he's you know pretty much average in terms of going around 4.5 yards per carry, but he gets about 3.5 of that after contact. And if you can imagine what Carlos Hyde could do if he had that extra second just to kind of scan the line in front of him, look to see where the gap is rather than having... the defensive line in his face pretty much as soon as he gets the ball. I think that would open up so many things that we could do with the QB, with the play calling. Whether we could make benefit of that, I think, is a different question. But I think O-line just helps the game enormously and brings out whatever the QB could do in terms of the positives that they would bring, but also the running game and various other parts as well.
Yeah, the best thing that can happen for the 49ers the rest of this season is we lose the last two games of the season, Blaine Gabbert is still alive after the end of the season, and then we go into free agency, go into the draft, and try and draft well with whoever the GM may be. That's pretty much the best situation for the team and for the franchise right now.
And we need to be looking at players like Trent Brown. You know, stick him in at right guard next week, at right tackle next week. See what he can do, you know. It'll give us an idea of where we need to go, what we need to do, and whether we've got anybody on that roster buried a little bit deeper that might be, at the very least, a good kind of swing tackle.
Yeah, and Brown should have been playing weeks ago because this, effectively now, we're going into two completely uncompetitive games that we're just jostling for draft position now. So it's not going to really be anything more than a glorified scrimmage games, the week 16 and week 17 games now.
With regards to the Week 17 game against the Rams, did they have anything to play for at the moment? Because I'm not sure. I don't have the league in front of me.
No, I think they're done for as well now, aren't they?
Yeah, they've secured that third spot.
Which means we've secured the fourth spot, of course.
Yes, which, just to jump in there, we've said on here that this is the worst we've been since that kind of hideous 2004-2005 type time. Well, this is now confirmed. We will finish bottom of the NFC West for the first time since 2005.
Let's change tack just a little bit and see if we can find some positives from the defense. Bowman led the tackling stats, 8 solo tackles and 4 joint tackles, which means he's now the joint NFL leader with DeQuell Jackson. Did they have a good game, or the score says otherwise? Let's face it.
Yeah,
they were put into really tough positions by the offense, weren't they?
Oh, definitely. And if you look at the stats, and I know sometimes the stats do lie, but, you know, they held AJ Green to just one reception. I know he went off injured in the third quarter. You know, Giovanni Bernard, 33 yards after, you know, last week's horrendous show in Cleveland to, you know, hold a running back of that caliber to 33 yards, you know, shows that they have stepped back up. And, you know, we saw Ian Williams get his first fumble recovery, you know, some first sacks. So it was definitely, you know, a step forward and a step back to the defence we're kind of used to.
Yeah, they definitely played well for the majority of the game. They played well enough to win a high number of games, to be fair to them. Unfortunately, our offence are not a normal team, and they are the worst in the league. So even if defence has a good game and only concedes 24, which essentially they did, they've still given up about 14 points too many to win a game of football under this current offence, unfortunately. You know, if you look at the bare bones of the game, we gave the Bengals 3 short fields and they scored 3 touchdowns. At that point, we don't have the coaches, the players, or the firepower on offense to get us out of that kind of size of a hole. You know, that's an 8 field goal game for the 49ers, you know. Like I said earlier, it was never a 10-point ball game, and people will probably look in history books in 20, 30 years' time and think, well, they lost a lot of games in 2015, but they weren't blown out. But we have pretty much been blown out in almost every defeat this season. And again, the same can be said about that era in the mid to late 2000s. The history book will suggest otherwise, but this is just dismal football and a really, really bad football team.
The run defense actually only allowed 1.9 yards per carry and 4 yards per offensive play. That's another stat from Mark, so thanks for that, Mark. Let's keep thanking you for all the stats. It's good to actually get a chance to thank you in person.
It's quite interesting as you kind of do a bit of research and you find these things and you just think, oh, never quite realised it was as good as that or as bad as that. And it kind of gives you a bit more perspective on the game.
And after losing Marcus Martin to the injury in the fourth quarter, Eric Pierce was moved to the right guard and Trent Brown came in at right tackle. Brown didn't surrender one QB hurry in his snaps. So just shows you, Pierce is not the man for the right-hand side of the line. Pierce is not the man for the line at all and shouldn't be on the 49ers at all, as far as I'm concerned. Put it this way, he's in good running to beat Bruce Ellington to Mike Ugly today. That's how badly he is performing.
Just a touch on your favourite, Paul, Bruce Ellington. Averaged 6.7 yards on 6 punt returns.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Say that again. Sorry, there was some static.
Your favorite Bruce Ellington averaged 6.7 yards on 6 punt returns.
No, I still didn't hear that. I'll say it again. All right, guys. It is time to go into our 2-minute drill. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, let's do it.
Brian, were the empty seats at Levi Stadium enough to get Jed York's attention?
They really should be now, shouldn't they? We touched on it last week again, that this is the time that the 49ers fans can make a real impression. And if ever there was a time to completely abandon ship, it's coming up in the week 17 game against the Rams. They really need to vote with their feet and make that place look as empty as possible in 2 weeks' time.
Gary, is Eric Pierce a lineman or a liability?
I think we've just touched on that. I think we all agree we don't want to see him back on the team next season. And with Trent Brown stepping in and doing a good job, it'd be nice to see him playing consistently for the next couple of weeks. And hopefully we've got a ready-made replacement there.
Mark, can we manage to go the whole season without a first quarter touchdown?
Unfortunately, I think we probably can. I just can't see any way that we're scoring. It's just, you know, the same old play calling, and if we're scripting the first 15 to 20 plays, there's very little I've seen so far that's going to change that and give us an offensive touchdown.
Brian, should the league be paying more attention to the lack of discipline on the field in the light of the Odell Beckham Jr. and Norton incidents?
Ooh, good question. I actually quite like to see a lot of, maybe not a lot of ill discipline, but some ill discipline from my team, because it shows that they really care. They're up for the fight. They're tough characters. But what Beckham did on Sunday was just completely out of order. And he should be receiving a suspension for that. And he should have even been ejected there and then. He shouldn't have even been on the field to make that game close at the end.
He has actually been suspended for one game. Okay.
Very much warranted, that suspension.
Gary, will the NFC East and the AFC South send below 500 teams to the playoffs?
Oh, saved by the bell. sorry, can you repeat that again, Paul? Did you say NFC East and AFC South?
The NFC East and the AFC South, yeah. Will they both send below 500 teams to the playoffs?
NFC East, I think Washington are going to step up. They've got that one-game lead, and I think they might win out and finish 9-7. AFC South is just a mess. I think that could well be a 500-team going forward from there. Who it's going to be, I don't know.
There is one more question that I had for the 2-minute drill. I'm going to ask it because it's kind of a relevant question. And I'll ask it to Mark. Can anybody beat the Panthers?
I thought the best chance of them being beaten was the Giants game. I just can't see it now. I think they'll go 16-0.
The Giants came very, very close to beating, didn't they? It was down to a field goal at the end.
Yeah, last few seconds, I think.
Yeah, the Giants scored 28 points on them at the end. And if the Panthers keep throwing away leads like that, then it's only a matter of time before they get beat. And again, they're a team that we're starting to see a lot of ill discipline sneaking in a bad kind of way. Though I think there was reports I was reading just before we started recording this about the practice squad players having baseball bats in the warm-up or something, and kind of threatening some of the Giants players with baseball bats in the warm-up. You know, last week they were taking pictures of you know, half the team on the sideline before the game's done. So that's the kind of ill discipline that will definitely catch a team out. So they could well lose a game.
Do you think that they may be running out of steam as well? Because 14-0 is going to take its toll on a team. They've got two games left. Do you think that they may be running out of steam, and that could be part of the reason that they maybe don't go for the unbeaten season?
Yeah, I think it is a long season. I think to try and go all the way, you know, I think it's only been done once in recent history. So I can't see him doing that. I think, you know, teams like Kansas, who have come good at the end of the season, obviously, as much as I hate to see it, teams like Seattle that always seem to do that, they're the ones who are better prepared to make a good sustained run to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's a kind of tricky situation for Carolina, isn't it? Because essentially now that they could rest pretty much everyone for the next 2 weeks, but then at that point, do they risk getting a little bit rusty, resting up a little bit too much, taking their eye off the ball, and having absolutely zero momentum going into what's going to be, you know, a very tough playoff game? It's a really hard situation to be in for any team, I think, at this point in the season for teams who are sort of unbeaten. You almost want something to play for, don't you, really, going into those last couple of games?
They haven't secured home field advantage yet, though, have they? Because Arizona are only two games behind. So if they did lose both games and Arizona won out, would Arizona overtake them?
That's a good point, actually. I don't know what the tie-breaking procedure is for that.
Can I just say, yes, they will. Because
hello, Kev.
Yes, they will, because it goes on conference record.
Right, okay, so there we go. Kev's just dipped in there. I'll explain why Kev's here in a minute. For now, though, it's time for what is gradually becoming the hardest part of this show to do. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We've got to find another good point from yesterday's game. We'll go with Brian first.
We're back up in the top five of the draft again, I believe. We're either fifth or sixth now, aren't we? Depending on the strength of schedule about around the teams around us.
Depends if Detroit lose tonight as well.
Okay, yeah.
So that's your one. We're back in the top five of the draft. We'll take any silver lining that we can. Gary?
I'm going to say the defence and also seeing Bowman back to full strength. We had some concerns about him last week. Thought he might be running out of gas, but I think he's picked back up and was definitely a leader on the field yesterday.
And Mark?
Yeah, I'd echo Gary's comments, but also a bit of a particular mention for Jimmy Ward. I thought he had a very good game yesterday.
My good is going to be the fans for actually making a statement. It was very clear in the game just how empty that stadium was. As we said, the fans paid for another banner to go over the stadium. It was supposed to say, hold Jed accountable. Apparently it said, hold JFD accountable. I don't know what's gone on there, but between that and, okay, the empty seat isn't a good thing, but people are now making a statement against the management of the 49ers, against the front office of the 49ers, and saying, look, this is not good enough, and we're going to show our displeasure, if you like. Let's go to the bad and back to Brian.
11 penalties. Just bad all round. Like we said earlier, with the false starts on the wide receivers, it's just needless. It's just constantly backing us up into holes that we really shouldn't be in, and it's just making the job so much harder than it needs to be, particularly on the offensive side of the football. There's just no excuse for false starts at home, particularly when it's an empty stadium.
Gary?
I'm going to say our pass catching. Obviously, you know, Vance McDonald's got a lot to answer for those two interceptions, but there was plenty. I think there was seven drops overall. And also Gabbert's accuracy was a bit off yesterday. So the whole package there.
And Mark?
I was going to go Vance McDonald, but I'll go with Eric Pierce. I know he's not naturally a right tackle. His more natural position is right guard, and that maybe links into why we appear to be a little bit better when he gets shifted inside. But he's consistently causing problems on that right-hand side of the line, and I just think it really doesn't help in any situation.
I'm going with the right-hand side of the line as well. It's not got any better through the season. okay, like you say, when he was moved into guard, maybe a little bit better, but it's still an absolutely awful, an awful offensive line. So that's my bad. Round to the uglies and back to Brian.
Yeah, just to kind of touch on other things that we've covered in depth already, just the whole offense, particularly in the first half, and Jeep Christ's play calling, it was just putrid. Like I said earlier, it was boring. There was nothing to it. There was no incentive for any of us to watch that game after half time, really.
Gary?
I'm going to say Tom Sula's challenging. Obviously, that first one was quite a poor one. But to leave it on a positive, at least he did get one at the end and leaves him 1-6 for the season.
And Mark?
I'm going to go for Pinion's punt, if you can call it that.
Oh, the 18-yarder.
The 18-yarder, yes.
Yeah, that was it. I managed to actually not see the punt. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I've managed to not be looking at the TV, so I still don't know how ugly that actual punt was. Sorry, guys. Bruce Ellington.
Oh, you can't do it.
As much,
I think we should veto.
Yeah, you're banned. Last 2 weeks, Paul, from mentioning Bruce Ellington as bad or ugly.
Well, okay, I'll do you a deal. I said 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, whenever it was, as long as Bruce Ellington is on the field, I am picking him as the ugly. So if he's not on the field next week, I won't pick him. There's the deal. But no, on a serious point, as much as he had a half-decent game yesterday, it doesn't make up for what he's done the rest of the season. So I'm not picking him as the ugly just based on yesterday. It's on a season-wide thing. I'm going long-term here, just finding an excuse to call Bruce Ellington out. So that's my ugly. So that's it. With it being Christmas week, there's only going to be one show this week, which means that we're going to take a look at the upcoming Detroit game now. So it's now time to properly say hello to Kev Nalen. Hello, Kev.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to the show. Should we take a look at the upcoming game against the Detroit Lions then?
I guess we should.
This is it's another trip out east, isn't it? Against a meh team. Can we actually go in there and get a win, or is everything lost now?
Well, obviously, we don't know what the Detroit score they're playing tonight as we record this. We don't know what they're going to be coming off the back of. But I think already we've been put down as a losing by a touchdown by Vegas. And I think we're going to lose by at least a touchdown, maybe 10 points. Really depends on what we've got offensively. You know, we've been down to our fifth and sixth choice running backs with Gaskins and Kadett at the end of last game. We could see Mike Davis coming back. Hopefully Sean Drawn will be back as well. Otherwise, I do really fear for us if we've got no running attack and we're relying on Gabbertron to get it into the receivers.
This could be one of the ugliest games to ever grace this season. I really don't want to see us lose, but another win or two to see out this season could possibly be the worst possible outcome for the team. I really just want the regular season to be over so I can enjoy some playoff football, really. I've got every Monday booked off in January as I've got lots of holiday to take. And so once Christmas is done, I just really want to get stuck into watching the playoffs just as long as Seattle and New England don't win. Touching on what Gary said there, if Drone's injured this week and Davis looks nowhere near to be getting back, is there a chance that Jared Hayne could be promoted off the 53 this week? I mean, if he can't get promoted off the 53 this week, he should just force himself away from San Francisco because he deserves better than this. If ever there's now a week for Jared Hayne to come onto the team and play in the last 2 weeks of the season and have a look at him, which is exactly the opposite of what we said weeks ago that he should have done, because this is just a crappy game that nobody cares about. At least show him the field and get him out there and let's have a look at him. Give us something to cheer Sunday night.
Do you think the defense can take a decent performance into Detroit and make it easier for the offense to actually get a win? Or is it just sort of beyond the realms of all possibility that the offense can do anything?
It's just a crapshoot with our defense, isn't it? You know, if they play like they did last week and the offense don't make as many mistakes, then, you know, there's a chance that we can keep the Lions down to a couple of scores. But if we play like we played against Cleveland, then we may as well just not turn up and give them the win.
Looking at the last five meetings of the 49ers and Detroit, They have all been in San Francisco, but the 49ers have won every single one of them going back to 2006. This is out in Detroit, and it's certainly not the same team that's won those five games. So, Kev, tell us about the pick six.
Okay, so last week, one of the presenters managed to get the pick six correct.
Yay!
And they weren't running it. So, Gary managed to get all six right.
It comes to something, though, when to get pick six, you've got to pick against the 49ers and pick against your second team, the Jaguars.
I can't believe you have the Jags as your second team. Shame on you.
The London Jaguars. Come on, Paul.
Yeah, just because they're good again now. Come on. Get off that bandwagon.
It's glory hunting.
I wouldn't say 5-8 or 5-9, whatever they are, is good.
It's better than the 49ers.
That's true.
Yeah, Brian and Paul, you got four each.
Yeah, I don't quite know what I was doing when I submitted my picks last week. I must have been having a bit of a stupid moment to have picked the Eagles, because I picked the Cardinals on all of my online pick-ems. For some reason, I typed the Eagles and never checked it. And I was looking at it this morning thinking, well, I've only got four. And then it was when I looked at the thread, I was like, what a numpty.
Mark got four as well. Deepak got three. And the Steelers comeback managed to save me from getting the first zero of the season by anybody. Overall, the leader is Jordan McDonald on 39. Point behind is Graham Ross on 38. And then Andrew Mitchell and Neil Jepson are on 37 apiece. Very tight, yeah. Just behind that, Gary is now the leading presenter on 36.
Oh, it's gone.
Hey.
Yay.
So he's all on his own in fifth at the minute. Paul is amongst a raft of people on 35. And that includes last week's equal second place, Matt Healy, who shows what a bad week can do. He can knock you down from being equal second down to into the pack. So it can work the other way as well. Brian's on 33. Deepak's on 31. And I'm on 23. I'm now equal 28th. Only 18 people have voted every week as well. So that means I'm behind five people who've only missed 1 week, behind four people who have missed 2 weeks, and I'm behind one person who's missed 3 weeks.
So, Kevin, have you ever thought of trying to pick the winner in Strictly Come Dancing instead?
Don't even start there. I was up at my mum's for the weekend, and I had to sit through the bleeding final.
Oh. So it's better than watching the 49ers, I suppose.
No, to be honest, I thought the 49ers was an improvement on that, but that's how much I hate Strictly Come Dancing, but there you go.
Oh, so that's the pick six as it stands right now then. Should we take a look at this week's pick six going forward then?
Okay. So, votes are in and we've got a right spread of games this week. So we've got the Redskins at the Eagles, which is the Saturday night game, or 1:30 Sunday morning over here. We've got the Patriots at the Jets and the 49ers at the Lions, which are both 6 o'clock kickoffs. Packers at the Cards, which is a 9:25. Giants at the Vikings, which is the 1:30 Monday morning game. And the Bengals at the Broncos, which is the 1:30 Tuesday morning game.
Is that going to be the Bengals?
Bengals at the Broncos.
At the Broncos. It just sounds like that. Right. Kev's tie. What do we reckon? I'm going to go Redskins at Eagles.
Kev's tie. I think it's. I think it could be our game. Nobody wants to watch our game. Our game's probably going to be these 6 o'clock games that they don't even put the score up on Red Zone like they did with our game at Cleveland last week, because nobody cares.
I'm going to say Kev's tie is Packers at Cardinals. It's going to be a ridiculously high scoring game, and they're just going to give up when it gets to like 60 all.
That could actually be a really good game, couldn't it?
It could be, yeah. Okay, so we will see. The first game is nice divisional rivalry. The Redskins at the Eagles. Paul.
This is an interesting game. Both teams in the NFC East, who they're all still sort of around the same record, aren't they? Eagles are 6-8. Washington Redskins are 7-7. Oh, I'm going to give the Redskins the edge, but only just.
Gary.
Yeah, I think I said earlier on, I think the Redskins are going to win out and clinch the division title. And from a pure selfish point of view, I want the Redskins to win, because that means the Eagles have got a better chance of finishing third in the division and playing the Rams at Twickenham next season.
Brian?
Yeah, I'm going to take Washington. Kirk Cousins is a fantasy machine right now, scoring absolute yups of points week after week, and luckily he's in one of my teams, so that's really good. And the Eagles got destroyed again this week. I think Washington have got a little bit of momentum going. I think they can go in there and get the win at Philadelphia.
So with everyone else picking the Redskins, it will be no surprise to hear that I'm picking the Eagles. They're at home. They're one of these teams that it's a coin flip which one turns up. But I just get the feeling they'll turn up this week and put that division back in the mixer. So, game two. Patriots at the Jets. Gary.
I think the Patriots are going to take this one. The Jets have been improving, and obviously they've still got something to fight for, but I think the Patriots are wanting to be clinching that bye and the home field advantage. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with the Patriots.
Brian.
Yeah, easy pick, Patriots for me. Big rivalry, but Patriots would be too good for the Jets.
Paul.
Yeah, I've got to go with the Patriots myself as well. You're taking Tom Brady into New York. I think he's going to take on the Jets and beat them soundly.
Yeah, I see a recurring theme starting this week. I've gone for the Jets. There may be a reason why I'm down on the 28th place, yes. not again, the Jets are at home again. And I think they possibly need it more than the Patriots to try and get in that last wildcard spot. Okay, game three. 49ers at the Lions. Paul.
Lions. I'm not saying any more than that. Just Lions.
Brian.
Lions.
Gary.
Lions.
And Brian is the winner, as this is the tie.
Hey!
As neither team can score, and they break the and they break the record for most punts in a single game. Game four. The Packers at the Cards. Gary.
I'm going to go for the Cards, I think, because they've still got that home field advantage to fight for, whereas I don't think the Pack are going to get there, and I think they've pretty much sewn up the North. So, yeah, I'm going to go for the Cards.
Paul.
I'd love to go for Green Bay, but it's out in Arizona, and as Gary's just said, Arizona have still got plenty to play for. I'm going to go with the Cardinals as well.
Brian.
Yeah, if this game was at Lambeau, I'd have probably picked the Packers, but as it's down in Arizona, I'm definitely picking the Cardinals for this one.
Oh my God, yes. Have a guess, people.
You've gone for the Packers.
Yes, I had gone for the Packers. And again, Cards have already secured at least one game home field. Packers are still fighting for their division, so I've gone for the Packers too. Cause a bit of an upset on that one. So, game five. The Giants at the Vikings. Brian.
Ooh, this is a tough one. I think, based on their performance in Carolina, I think the Giants will sneak it out just against Minnesota in Minnesota. Be a close one, but I think the Giants can just about do it.
Paul.
I'm going to go the other way. I think the Vikings with home field advantage. The Giants can have a great game like they did last week against the Panthers. They can have an awful game like they did against Washington. I think it's going to go back to an awful game for the Giants. So Minnesota to win.
Gary.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Minnesota as well. The Vikings need to hold off Atlanta for that final wild card spot. So they really want to be winning out. So yeah, I see the Vikings taking this one.
And I'd gone for the Vikings even before Odell Beckham Jr. had been suspended for the game. They just need the game more than the Giants are. Finally, game six. The Bengals at the Broncos. And Brian.
I'm going to go with Denver. I think they were unlucky in the game against Pittsburgh on Sunday night. And Cincinnati obviously still going to be without Andy Dalton. We're not sure on the fitness of AJ Green right now. We've got the thin air factor in Denver, so for that alone, I think I'm going to take the Broncos.
Okay, Gary.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Denver as well. They've got Kansas breathing down their neck now to win that win the West, so I think they're going to want to win out as well. I think, yeah, Bengals without Dalton and Eifert aren't the team they were before, so yeah, I'm going to go Broncos.
And Paul?
I was going to go with the Bengals. AJ McCarron had a decent game for his first NFL start and the first quarterback to come out of Alabama since 1987 and get a win. Is that right?
Yep.
I was going to go for them, but with the argument of the other two guys, the thin air, Denver, I've got to go with the Broncos for the win, but only just.
Therefore, it will be no surprise to hear that I'd already picked the Bengals. Because basically, they've had a week and a half rest compared to the Broncos, because they rested half the game against us. And, I think they'll manage to squeak it in there in the battle of the backups. And that's the pick six done.
And that means that is it for this episode of the show. Thanks to Gavin and Kat for the two-minute drill questions. Thanks to Andrew Mitchell for running the pick six behind the scenes. Thanks to Mark Lyon for the stats. Thanks to AudioNautics.com for the music. The discussions will continue on Twitter at Frequency 49 and on Facebook. Search the Frequency 49 show. We'll be back next week to review the Detroit Lions game. All of us here at the Frequency 49 show wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. It's time to start carol singing, boys.
Jingle bells, Jedburgh smells, Falky flies away. Oh, what fun we haven't seen from Jeep Christ in 15.
Oh, I do apologise for Brian singing there. That was not planned. On behalf of Brian Davis, Gary Rowledge, Mark Lyon and Kev Neal, and I've been Paul McDonald. You've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.